And that, in fact, for him, is the only tie Americans have with Great Britain. Settlements having been thus effected in the wilds of America, the emigrants thought proper to adopt the system of laws under which they had hitherto lived in the mother country, and to continue their union with her by submitting themselves to the same common sovereign, who is thereby made the central link connecting the several parts of the empire thus newly multiplied. Now, this is a radical departure. Very few other Americans are willing to deny parliamentary sovereignty over the empire. They all acknowledge the legitimacy of navigation acts. It's Jefferson who is arguing that Parliament has absolutely no sovereignty over the colonies. That, in fact, if the empire is to be constitutionally governed, it would have to be on the lines that we now associate with the British Commonwealth. The true ground on which we declare these acts void, and these being the Townshend Acts, is that the British Parliament has no right to exercise authority over us. Well, perhaps even more radical than this constitutional doctrine is his claim that once he's stated all of the grievances that the Americans have against Parliament, that they result in nothing so much as clear evidence of a conspiracy against American liberty. Single acts of tyranny may be ascribed to the accidental opinion of a single day, but a series of oppressions begun at a distinguished period and pursued unalterably through every change of ministers too plainly prove a deliberate and systematical plan of reducing us to slavery. That's powerful rhetoric. That sort of a conspiratorial worldview is exactly what creates radical revolutionaries. And the use of that word slavery is not unintentional by Jefferson. Jefferson is still grappling with that problem. In fact, he blames the British government for promoting slavery in the colonies. The abolition of domestic slavery is the great object of desire in these colonies, where it was unhappily introduced in their infant state. But previous to the enfranchisement of the slaves, we have, it is necessary to exclude all further importations from Africa. Yet our repeated attempts to effect this by prohibitions and by imposing duties which might amount to a prohibition have been hitherto defeated by His Majesty's negative. And in fact, Virginia had passed laws trying to limit the importation of slaves, not because they didn't want slaves, but because the market was glutted and they wanted to keep up the value of prices. But Jefferson doesn't see it that way. Jefferson, always the idealist, sees it as a British conspiracy against freedom, thus preferring the immediate advantages of a few African corsairs to the lasting interests of the American states and to the rights of human nature deeply wounded by this infamous practice. Well, finally, Jefferson concludes his document by invoking the social contract idiom of Locke, the idiom that demands the right of free people to have revolution when necessary. And he warns the king about the consequences of violating his trust. That these are our grievances which we have thus laid before His Majesty with that freedom of language and sentiment which becomes a free people claiming their rights as derived from the laws of nature and not as the gift of their chief magistrate. Let those flatter who fear it is not an American art. To give praise which is not due might be well from the venal, but would ill beseem those who are asserting the rights of human nature. They know and will therefore say that kings are the servants, not the proprietors of the people. Well, it's this sort of stirring rhetoric which John Adams recognizes as the natural person to write the Declaration of Independence. And it's that which I want to look at with our remaining minutes. I want to state something right away. The Declaration of Independence, one of the great founding documents of American statecraft and nationality, has been subject then and now to a lot of criticism. Many scholars have claimed that it's decidedly unoriginal, it's derivative. Some have noted at the time as well as today, the existence of other declarations like the so-called Mecklenburg Declaration of the previous year, which had a lot of the same components as Jefferson's declaration. The phrases in it are standard. There's very little that's original or innovative. These criticisms, I think, fundamentally miss the point of what the declaration is about, what Jefferson's trying to do. As he states to Henry Lee some years later, the object of the Declaration of Independence was not to find out new principles or new arguments never before thought of, nor merely to say things which had never been said before, but to place before mankind the common sense of the subject, neither aiming at originality of principle or sentiment, nor yet copied from any particular and previous writing. It was intended to be an expression of the American mind, which it so clearly is.